I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Mike Lubega of MSNBC and MLB.com.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we welcome you to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters with my great friends Mitch Albom and Mike Lubega. I am Bob Ryan, and we are here every Monday and Friday morning for you. In a resumption of a television program that lasted damn near three decades, gentlemen. But anyway, what a weekend and what a day, and I thought a fascinating day in the NFL yesterday, and including a kicker who was uncharacteristically awful, and a guy who kicked a 63-yard field goal to win a game, and another guy who kicked the worst-looking game-winning field goal I think I've seen in 50 years. And we will start, though, with the rampaging L.A. Rams, who needed to get down to nitty-gritty to get it done, guys, but they got it done, and they remain undefeated as they beat the Seahawks 33-31.
I mean, that's a good win for them. I mean, and by the way, even though the Seahawks, Mitch and Bob, are not what they were and are a fading version of the team that we thought was set up to be the next thing in pro football until stuff happened one night in Glendale, Arizona, with Malcolm Butler and them, okay? But it's still a hard, you know, it's still a hard place to play. I thought, to me, that was a great statement game for the Rams, especially coming back to win it.
Yeah, I first of all, the way that they played, the way that they came back, the confidence that they showed in their quarterback, it wasn't Jared Goff's best game. But you know, he still is playing incredible football, and Todd Gurley, and as if they didn't have enough weapons, you know, I don't know if you watched this game. I watched it. Robert Woods is just insane. You know, and where did
and
he come
from?
And my
new favorite player, Cooper Kupp. I love Cooper Kupp. Yeah. I like his name, but he's really good.
But he got hurt, and that's definitely going to hurt them. But I really like this. I like the Rams team. I like everything about them. I mean, we all have gone on and on about McVay being the coach and the attitude that they have. You're right, Mike. Seattle's one of those teams that you no longer really write them in as a championship thing, but any week you have to play them up there, you could lose. I don't care who you are. You could be New England. You could be anybody. You can lose. Russell Wilson, you know, had his big moments, and yet, on a 4th-and-1, it was the other quarterback keeping the ball with less than 2 minutes left on a play that, let's face it, a lot of teams would have punted. So I like the confidence. They're perfect. You know, I look at them and I look at Kansas City and I keep saying to myself, which one of these is going to be for real at the end of the year? You know, who's playing the way that they will? And honestly, I can't say. History would say go against Kansas City. But, you know, I've not seen the Rams do it all year, for an entire year either.
And, Mitch, one other thing about the Seahawks, okay? If they win that game, and I don't think either any of us here have a great deal of confidence about the Seahawks going forward. And Russell Wilson didn't even throw for 200 yards yesterday, okay? But if they win the game, they're 3-2. The Rams are 4-1. And the Seahawks maybe come out of that game, a division game, thinking, okay, game on. And now, you know, now you look at the standings and it's a great big 5-0 and they're 2-3. And I think, you know, at this point in the season, nobody could see them beating the Rams and ended up first in that division.
No, it's obviously the Rams to win or lose, but those two losses they have, let's see how that, you know, what the ramifications are and what as they enter into the concussion protocol, because not only did Cooper Kupp got hurt, but Brandon Cooks was also injured. And obviously, this is a serious, could potentially very serious problem for the Rams and their offense. As great as Gurley is, and as great as well as Goff is playing, those are two important cogs for them.
Still, mark this down: 1:39 left, 3rd-and-a-long 1 at the 42-yard line. You put your punter out, and then Seattle calls a timeout for a measurement, and they put the offense back in, give it to the quarterback. Okay, this is against Seattle, in Seattle, on the 42-yard line. And they say, damn it, we're winning the thing. You know, we're not giving the ball back to them. We're winning the thing. And so I just like the attitude of the Rams. I it's so weird for me to say that because there wasn't an L.A. Rams a few years ago. So it feels like their franchise has an attitude, but it's really just Sean McVay and, you know, what he's been able to put together there. There's such a new team in that location.
And in contrast, we have the Cowboys, who
How about those Cowboys, Bob?
Who did not go for it?
How about them Cowboys?
Who did not do it the right, did not give their 225, 30-pound quarterback this quarterback sneak option that Goff took.
How do you know how much he weighs and how tall he is? You were amazing. No, you got that right off the top of your head.
I
love that. No, I'm admiring it.
I mean, he's a big kid. I mean, it's like, don't we know that Newton's a big guy? That we know that Dak Prescott's a big kid and a big guy.
I know they're big. You know how much they weigh.
Well,
that's the difference
between me
and you.
That's an arbitrary. I'm guessing. Okay. Very strong. Oh no, I'm arbitrary there. I'm saying he's 225 to 230. He's a big guy. Anyway, he's a quarterback sneak's an intriguing thing because I'm sitting in the home of the greatest quarterback sneaker I've ever seen. He is Brady, which is following the worst quarterback sneaker I had ever saw in my life. It was Bledsoe, who, by the way, is 6'5 and went 230 and couldn't quarterback sneak in a grade school league. But anyway, I love the call. I love what Goff did. I love that the confidence they showed. I liked it a lot. And you gotta like the Rams. But I'll tell you, I don't want to go too far. I want to get right to, because guys, I'm awaiting the mail. Well, no mail today, so I have to, because it's a Indigenous Peoples Day. You know that. Mm-hmm. So it's a hot. There's no mail today, but. In my mail tomorrow, I'm hoping that I get my new card from my Pat Mahomes fan club.
Oh, man.
Hey, no touchdown passes. How much more do we need to see?
no touchdown passes. They give a beatdown to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, Mitch, here's the thing. And you know that scattered throughout the regular season, there are – in fact, I'm doing a little bit of a parting shot about the Patriots today. Next week, Sunday Night Football. Well, Patriots, yeah. Chiefs, come on. Oh, let's do this.
Yeah, now maybe it didn't look that way on the schedule when you first saw it before the season started, but this is an absolute showdown of the champions of the past and perhaps the champions of the future.
By the way, Mike and Mitch, that could be up against, if you're a Boston sports fan, could be up against a potential game 5 of the ALCS with the Yankees. I'm just saying, sports.
No, that's like
seems like somebody ought to change.
No, game 5 is Thursday night, Bob.
Yes, forget that. Hey, Bob. That's Bob just fumbled. He just turned the ball over. Okay, a verbal turnover. That's
let me go back.
Ball goes over you guys on downs.
Let's go back to Mahomes here. What I liked about this game, ironically, is he didn't throw 6 touchdown passes, you know, and they won. Yeah. Their defense played well. And remember, they're taking on Jacksonville, who's got a great defense. Jacksonville was all over the place. Blake Bortles just looked awful, and it was a wet game, and the balls were bouncing weird, and balls were going off helmets and being intercepted in weird places. But at the end of the day, it's a 30-14 win for Kansas City, and let's face it, they're not going to win every week with Mahomes throwing 6 touchdown passes, but they are winning so far every week with him leading the way. And even though he threw an interception and all that, he still led that team and made key plays. And I like everything about them except their history. You know, I've said it week after week. You know, how many times have we watched Kansas City start fast? So, Reed's going to have to prove it in December and in January. But until then, you know, he's running. They're running away with it. So I really look forward to that game.
Wasn't that a nice little subplot in that game yesterday? Jalen Ramsey and Hill.
Mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill.
Oh, man. To see every play, you know, you hold your breath, something could happen. And then, and Hunt, too. I mean, right now, the reigning tight end of football is obviously Travis Kelce. And, did you see a couple of juke moves he made? I mean, he is really, really.
By the way, no touchdowns, but 424 yards of offense against Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
I don't think New England got that, did they?
No. Their first digit was not a 2.
We talked about this on Friday, okay? And so we spent, you guys talked about it, about the Patriots and the Colts. But this will be a tremendous test for Mahomes because the game is not in Kansas City. He goes into the belly of the beast. He goes into Foxborough. He goes into Gillette Stadium. He walks into the force of the Patriots and that crowd and all of their history. Oh, man, I mean, this... For October, for the middle of October, this is a tremendous game because the Patriots are looking to build on what we saw from them on Thursday night. And the Chiefs are ready to say, yes, we know about all the stuff that's happened to us in the past, but it was a pass that didn't have Patrick Mahomes behind center. And, you know, usually I kind of laugh when I see that, you know, the camera go into the locker room after the game and watch the coach talk. And what. But I watched that kid speak to his teammates yesterday about get back to work. Now it's on to New England. And he does not act like a kid. He acts like, you know, it's the old line. This kid acts like he's been there before.
Is there something, I mean, I'm throwing this out there, guys. I mean, I don't know if you ever, if you subscribe to the theory or not, or just poo-poo it. It's just something to the genetic thing about the way he was raised, a son of a major league pitcher, the atmosphere that he was that he grew up in, the locker rooms he was able to hang out with, including baseball ones with A-Rod, who knows this kid since he was like 11 years old. There are guys like that we encounter that, and I think that's part of who they are.
A very interesting sidebar point that we have been, you know, covering sports for so many decades collectively between us. And we've seen this model before. The son of the coach, the son of the player. I've seen it go both ways, to be honest. I've seen guys who just kind of feel it's coming to them and it's just natural or whatever. And they expect this, that, or the other thing if they've been pampered along. But I think that more often than not, you're right, Bob, that exposure to this world, the noise, the sidelines, having to do things under pressure, all the rest of it. It does turn kids, and we meet them and they are kids. You see them in college when they're 18 or 19 who have grown up, you know, the son of a professional player or a coach. They just have a different, you know, you look at them and you say, well, maybe when they play video games, they act like a kid. But when they play football, they act like grown men. And by the time they get to the NFL, they are, you know, and you're right about that. That's an interesting side note that I hadn't thought about with him. But I think it's a pattern that we see with a lot of players. And maybe that's part of why he's so successful. So
and they loved him. You know, this is all props to the Chiefs. Okay. And, you know, I don't think anybody came out of that college football season. And we've seen a lot of Texas quarterbacks, I'm talking about from the state of Texas, who have put up amazing numbers, but they saw something in this kid and moved up to take him. And now here they are. And, you know, we use this expression a lot, but it's valid sometimes in sports. He clearly right now looks like a transformational player. And I hope he is blessed with good health because just remember, we were having the exact same conversation about Deshaun Watson the exact same time 1 year ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
And health is everything.
And there was a point, you know, early on in his career, you know, RG3 was all the rage, and you know.
Yeah. Right. So, and Mr. Watson, the list is long.
And Mr. Watson did enough to beat the Cowboys, who continue to kind of plod along in what is looking to be what might be the worst division in football right now.
Really? Does anybody want to win that division? Honestly.
Mitch, but remember, it wasn't so terribly long ago that no. was like the class of the league. And now look at it. I mean, if the Redskins do not beat the Saints on Monday Night Football, then nobody in that division will have a winning record.
Yeah. Oh, it used to be Philadelphia's bad fortune to have to be in the same division with Dallas and New York, you know.
And Washington
Yeah. And then everything flipped last year, and now they all look terrible. And, you know, I was talking about Philadelphia. Let's jump over to that game with Minnesota. That was a very important game. Now, you wouldn't know it by the records because Philadelphia comes out of it at 2-3, and the Vikings only improved to 2-2-1. But these are both teams with big backstories, okay? The Eagles obviously trying to come off and avoid a Super Bowl hangover, and the Vikings, you know, shipping every quarterback they had out of town and putting all their chips on Kirk Cousins, who so far, even though they're 2-2-1, it's not Kirk Cousins' fault. And yesterday he went 30 for 37,
yeah,
301 yards, no interceptions. He makes smart passes. He's doing everything he's supposed to do, but I'm going to tell you that football team, The biggest blessing they got is the guy, probably the cheapest guy on the roster still, is Adam Thielen. Where this kid came from so and what this kid does and how everybody missed this kid. They were talking about him yesterday and they said, what was the knock on you coming out? You know, why didn't people pick you? He said, I didn't have a knock. Nobody knew me. He said, I wasn't well enough known to have a knock.
No knock.
And, you know, I mean, there was no knock. He was from Minnesota State. You know, they knew him in, you know, a couple local people knew him in Minnesota. This guy is clutch. He was all over the field making all the big plays yesterday. And then at the very end, when they try the onside kick, who fields the ball like a shortstop, keeping it in front of him? Adam Thielen. I mean, this is one of those guys that, you know, like Dennis Rodman with the Pistons and nobody ever heard of him, whatever, that suddenly transforms a team in the role that he plays. He may not be the star player of the team, but the fact that he can do so many things and he's such a go-to guy is going to make Kirk Cousins' life in Minnesota much more blessed.
Hey, Mitch, and how about nobody would have ever thought coming into the season that this would be as much of a glamour combination at wide receiver as there is in the sport. But yeah. Thielen and Stephon Diggs.
It's
like Cousins has options, and he's got more options than he ever had before. And, you know, they're 2-2-1. I think they had one of the most unusual losses so far this season,
right,
against the Bills at home. But you're right. And that's another division that is going to be up for grabs, because I was thinking this yesterday watching, the Packers lose to your Lions, Mitch.
We're
well aware after the last couple of weeks that Supreme Court justices have jobs for life, but I'm starting to wonder if Mike McCarthy has one of those in Green Bay.
Well, we have a new motto here in Detroit, by the way. We only beat the good teams. That's hanging around our... So
that was a fun game, though. That was a fun game yesterday.
It was a fun game because at 24-0, you still felt like Green Bay was going, okay, we got them right where we want them. And they started to come back. But, give the Lions credit. They pushed the line out far enough, and they kept it up there. And they relied on a lot of mistakes. But they did sack Aaron Rodgers several times, stripped the ball from him when they needed to. I mean, when you see Aaron Rodgers frustrated and, you know, punching the air and punching the ground in anger, you've gotten to him. He does not like to show that. You know, he likes to usually look like he's sleepwalking through a game. So, yeah, they're touchable. Everybody in the NFC North is touchable. I still think Chicago probably has the best chance of winning it. But one other thing on Adam Thielen, just to, you know, I'm not a huge statistics person and I don't spend a lot of time on it. But as I'm looking at his chart, we know this, they've mentioned it's the first time it's ever happened to a receiver. So first time it's ever happened to a receiver, and the guy's name is Adam Thielen. Game one, 116 yards. Game two, 135 yards. Game three, 105 yards. Game four, 131 yards. Game five, 102 yards, or in reverse order. I did them 5-4-3-2-1. That's the first time receiver started a season with 500 yard plus games. And he has been targeted no less than 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, about 60 times so far this season. So that's who Kirk Cousins is looking for. And it's an amazing player. And I think he's always going to give him a chance.
What a reflection of the times that is and the emphasis on passing.
Yeah,
it is. And in addition to his obvious skill, so many loose ends, and what a day it was. You know, you mentioned the Packers, and Crosby missed the four field goals, which is incredible. Not that they were all chip shots; one was in the 50s, but still, and an extra point. So all those points left on the board. But the Cleveland field goal. I mean, I was watching the end of that game. I mean, where do we rank that?
Mike, what do you call that?
It almost reminded me of David Gordon against Notre Dame.
Oh my God, Bob! I'm telling you, has there been? Seriously, we have had a lot of fun with this NFL season. There has been stuff happening every Sunday. But can I ask you guys a question? Is there a better reality series right now in this sport than the Cleveland Browns? And this, to talk about transformational players, Baker Mayfield is going to be that. I think a lot of people scratched their head when they moved up to take him. I mean, when they did take him with the first pick in the draft. But oh my God, they could be so much better than they are, but they could be worse than they are. And finally, what did they play? Three overtime games already?
Yeah.
Oh no, this is great.
I was
overtime to win by three, but that was a 3-1 Baltimore team they beat.
Yeah, I was rooting for a tie. I love the tie thing. That second tie would have been just second.
Two ties.
And I guess the other good thing I was rooting for is losing. Losing to a safety. That was almost possible at one moment.
Well,
but what a kick by Caleb. No, I want to call him Caleb Joseph. No, that's the wrong sport. Greg Joseph. That was the ugliest game-winning kick you're going to see all year.
I didn't think he made it. It was so low and so flat and so I said,
"Oh, God, they
missed
it." And you expect him to miss it, Mitch.
Oh, of course.
Well, of course you expect him to miss it. It's Cleveland. But right at this moment, as we sit here on this Monday morning after 5 or 6 weeks of the season, the Cleveland Browns have the same record as the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a notably better record than the Atlanta Falcons.
I know.
All right? The Atlanta Falcons, the offensive juggernaut machine, the team that was supposed to bounce back from its bouncing back in the Super Bowl loss, is now 1-4. With all that talent, with all that amazing offensive talent, and supposedly, a defense that can hold things, 1-4, Pittsburgh may have saved their season by winning that game. One of those two teams, as I said last week, was going to, be pretty much done. But Cleveland's got the same record as Pittsburgh. So, you're right. This is a crazy season, and it is the – some years you talk about teams coming, and then in the end it's New England again. This has a feel of a year where the teams coming are actually – some of them are going to be there at the end, and some of the old favorites – I don't know if it's going to be Atlanta. I don't know if it's going to be Pittsburgh. I don't know if it's going to be, some of the other ones, certainly Seattle and all the rest. But some of those old favors of perennials are going to miss the playoffs altogether.
We are about to escape football by burying the lead. Because you mentioned the AFC North, should we be paying attention to the leaders? The Cincinnati Bengals.
4-1. Came back again yesterday.
I'm going to be totally honest. When I picked up the paper, and yes, folks, I read a newspaper, many of them, every day. I picked up the paper this morning and looked at the standings and said, holy bleep, the Bengals are in 4-1. And I paid zero attention to them this
Mike,
year.
Mike, you used to use a line on the Sports Reporters all the time that always made me chuckle inside. Name a Bengal, win fabulous prizes, and I, and go ahead because they are not a team that I spend
Andy
a lot
Dalton,
of time looking.
I know
at.
That.
Andy Dalton and Mitch. By the way, when referencing what I said about Mike McCarthy, Marvin Lewis does have a job for life, Mitch.
There's one.
Even when he's about to lose his job, he keeps it. But can we talk for a minute? We've talked about Bob's Patriots. We've talked about Mitch Albom's Lions. Can we talk about the Big Blue, the New York Giants, and the way they lost yesterday on a day when they kind of had a chance to play themselves even closer to what may be the top of this sketchy division? They scored 30 points again. Now, you have to be from New York or following the Giants to know they hadn't scored 30 points in a game since, I believe, the end of the 2015 season. So now... On this day, Odell Beckham Jr., who had caused a controversy by kind of throwing his quarterback under the bus, not only catches a touchdown pass, he throws a touchdown pass to Saquon Barkley. Barkley, I don't know if you guys saw the highlight, looked like Bob Beamon on the long jump when he ended up in the end zone. Okay,
I thought he hurt himself on that.
He thought he hurt himself too. Yeah. And so everything is set up on the road for the Giants to maybe turn their season around going into the Eagles game on Thursday night. And out comes Graham Gano to kick a 63-yard field goal to win the game for his team. Which, guys, I know you've seen it by now, he not only does, but that kick, I believe, could have been 70 yards if he needed to do it, and the Panthers win 33-31.
Yep. Nothing said. I mean, it was I couldn't believe that kick.
He killed it, Bobby. He killed it.
Totally crushed that kick, and just the polar opposite of Greg
of
Joseph,
the Browns kick. It's the opposite.
But, they both look like a line drive in the box score, as they say. So there we go.
Mitch, you should have a split screen and say, "Yes, kids, this is a game winning field goal.
Yeah,
and this is a game winning field goal."
Right, and then show the Lions game and say, and this is not how you kick field goals.
Poor
I'm going to talk about Mason Crosby a little later on in the show when we do our parting shots. But, you know, I want to say, and then we're going to move on to baseball, obviously. But, you know, as someone who watches the Giants from afar and not in their hometown there, you know, watching Beckham and watching Barkley, they're incredible talents. That pass, which involved all three of the offensive stars there, you know, ended up being, you know, sort of one of those highlight films where look what we can do. And yet the look what we can do offensively is 1-4. And the Atlanta Falcons, who are also at look what we can do offensively, are 1-4. And and the Dallas Cowboys, who have a lot of offensive, you know, 2-3. It doesn't add up. You know, you're not the sum of your parts. Those are amazing parts that the Giants have. And Saquon Barkley, again, you know, too much pressure on him to try to save the franchise. A running back can't do that. But I saw moves there yesterday that I have not seen since Barry Sanders. You know, he's got that kind of elusiveness. He's really, really good. And Beckham is, when he's healthy, he's a nutcase, but he's phenomenal. But 1-4 is 1-4.
And Mitch, you know, Mitch, you have made this point time and again since the Giants took Barkley with the second pick of the draft. And we've talked about this. Yes, he might have that kind of talent. He might be one of those once-a-generation running backs the way Barry Sanders was for the Lions. But, here's the rhetorical question. How many Super Bowls did Barry Sanders win?
Right. And as I said, Adam Thielen's got the 5 games with 100 yards plus, not a running back. Hey guys, you're not going to find any running back in the NFL. I don't even have to look.
Oh, and by the way, since we're talking about Barkley and all the controversy of the Giants taking a running back and not a quarterback, you did note that the four rookie quarterbacks were 4-0 yesterday.
Yes,
and,
we did.
And I don't think it's ever happened before in NFL history.
Guys, we got to pay quick homage, I think, to one thing from college football.
We'll do a whole thing on college football.
Oh, we will. Okay, great.
Yeah, all right. Hang on, Bob. We'll get to that after baseball. Before we get to baseball, guys, have you ever looked at your credit card statement and been shocked by the interest rate? Is that a rhetorical question?
That's a rhetorical question.
You know, you could actually roll all of your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed rate. Now, if you have ever gone through that type of thing, and if you've ever looked at how many credit cards you have and you say, oh, this is driving me crazy, then you want to talk about Lightstream, all right? Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.89% APR with AutoPay. That's a heck of a lot lower than your average credit card interest rate, which is somewhere between 18% and 1,000%, depending on how bad a deal you got. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you can even get your funds as soon as the day that you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate and no fees. And by the way, in case you want to go green, Lightstream plants a tree with every loan they fund. That's pretty interesting, right? So our listeners will get a special discount on top of Lightstream's already low rates if they contact them this way. The only way to get this discount, go to lightstream.com/sportsreporters, lightstream.com/sportsreporters. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/sportsreporters for that discount and for more information. All right, as someone in the press box once said very famously, baseball, gentlemen, baseball,
yes.
Particularly in October. And where do we begin? We already got one team in, and it's probably the least likely team we would have thought of. And Milwaukee rolls on in a sweep. But there's so much.
But they're not least likely the way they have played, especially since the 1st of September. And they might be playing better baseball than anybody. I'll take this, Bobby. I was at Fenway on Friday night. I wrote a column about this for MLB.com yesterday. Okay. The Yankees are winning this series 1-1. It happens sometimes in sports because of the force of what they did on Saturday night. They will go back to the Bronx where they have won 7 straight postseason games, feeling as if they can keep this thing from even going back to Fenway Park. And as great as Gary Sanchez was on Saturday night, this is all built around a guy who right now is the biggest star in the sport, and that is Aaron Judge, who has come out of the box hitting the way he has, first against the A's, then in these first 2 games against the Yankees. Bob, you know where he hit that home run to the right of the Monsters. Right. Very few right-handed hitters hit the ball there. He is, the whole thing is organized around him. He's the most dangerous number two hitter in the history of baseball. And if the Red Sox do not get a good game out of Nathan Eovaldi in game three, they're going to lose in four games.
Fears are being realized by Red Sox fans who were paying attention on both sides of the ball, in both ways. In other words, first, the fear of the Yankees, that it was very all-pervasive. The fear of Judge, and everybody realizes that he missed so many games, and the Yankees' win-loss record with him and without is very radically different. All right, so we knew that. And here he is doing it, as people feared, number one. And the Yankees' formula in general, which is hit home runs and and rely on a bullpen, is there. All right. And number two, the Red Sox, with the frailty of the pitching staff, the worries about the pitching, not only the bullpen, but the starters, the complete implosion, predictable probably, of David Price. The fact that their young stars are not producing as they have not produced in the last 2 years. I'm talking about Betts and Bogart. Well, Bogart's hit a home run. It's Betts who has not been doing much. Anyway, all these things, it's the real convergence of everything so far for the Red Sox. And I totally agree with you, Mike. That's the feel. The feel is very negative and worrisome.
Yep.
And everybody knows how good the Yankees are in Yankee Stadium, et cetera. This is, and the 108 means nothing. Everyone knows, most people should know that. That's the 108 means nothing.
That's so funny you say that, because the sentence was about to come out of my mouth. This is 108. I listen to you guys, so each one of you represents the city that's in this series. So I look at it, from 1,000 miles away out here. And I keep saying, what happened to 108? 108 doesn't mean, I've never seen Red Sox are like the baseball version, at least their fans, of a hypochondriac who gets a clean bill of health and then goes into the doctor and says, you must be wrong. Find something. There's got to be something wrong. And they walk and they say, look at our pitchers' postseason records. This isn't going to work. And then Chris Sale comes out and delivers a great game. It's like, okay, so he broke the curse. So, okay, Sale, Price, and Porcello, okay. But as soon as Price does what Price does, which is, and thank you, Detroit, we're finally, you can have him this time.
So that's how it goes.
The way it's got to work around here, all right? So now I'm watching this, and then you're all so panicked, see, doctor, I knew there was something there. I am not surprised that New York went into Boston and got a game. And I'm not going to be surprised when Boston goes into New York and gets a game. They are both really good teams. And Bob, I know you're reflecting Boston's phobia about the pitching. And I don't blame you. But, they also have other parts to their team. And I have every expectation this is going to be a 5-game series, or at least a close four. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not necessarily going where you're going, Mike, that this is going to be over so fast. I just think 108 counts for something.
It does count for something. But even going into the wild card game, Billy Bean said to me how random the playoffs are and how in so many ways, everybody's equal, and then stuff happens and games churn on the smallest moments. All I'm going to say is the Yankees haven't just hit in this series. And Bob, this. The Yankees feel like they ought to be up 2-0. They came back from 5-0 down. Judge hits a home run off of Kimbrel. Now it's 5-4. The Red Sox were hanging on for the last 2 hours. Fenway Park was scared to death over the second half of Friday night's game. But something else, Bob, you referenced the bullpen, and it is true. I think the Yankees have pitched 8 guys so far in the first 2 games. The only one who pitched badly was Jay Happ, okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody else has done something good for the Yankees. And, now they're looking at being able to pitch their ace at home. And I'm telling you something, the Red Sox have been rocked by this. And when you look at Judge, and we can talk about 108 versus 100, okay? Yeah, they did win by 8 games. But always remember that Judge missed 7 weeks. They shattered the home run record. They would have shattered the home run record. They broke it with 267 home runs, the Yankees did, okay? Imagine what that number would be if Judge had played those 7 weeks, okay? And, we always talk about whether hit or miss teams like that are vulnerable to good pitching in the playoffs. Well, they're not facing very good pitching right now. Okay. And Aaron Boone says the same thing. If you're facing a good pitcher, he can strike you out whether you're hitting singles or home runs. So they're going to live and die with the long ball. And now they're going back, even as small as Fenway Park is, Mitch, you know this, the Yankees ball, the Yankee Stadium sometimes feel like it should be in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Mm.
We have to mention name Gary Sanchez for a couple of reasons. One is what he's done. But the idea that there was a lot of, as Mike, as you well know, a lot of speculation in New York going into this series as to whether he should even be in the lineup.
Yeah, because they were worried about pass balls.
And he should have been in the lineup in the wild card game, you know, as in favor of Austin Romine, who, you know, this is, obviously, this is why he's in the, and now a similar, you know, quite, you know, debate is now taking place in Boston as to why, whether or not Rafael Devers should be back in the lineup with the potential, his home run potential. He had 21 home runs, including a notable home run in 2017 off of Chapman. Everybody remembers off the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He's a lousy third baseman, but you know, he.
So is the Yankees' third baseman. It doesn't seem to be hurting them very much.
So anyway, it's just part of the strategy and part of the debate. And you know, obviously, everybody, manager Boone looks very good by the decision to go with Sanchez, and yet that doesn't mean that Sanchez isn't a pass ball at a crucial moment awaiting to happen yet. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, this tapestry still needs to unfold. It's interesting to me as I'm listening, and we're looking over the players, not just in this series but in the other ones. You know, wasn't it just a blink ago that people were saying, you know, the way to win in baseball, win a championship, is small ball. You know, just giving a small ball, run
Kansas
around,
City.
You know, steal things. Yeah, you know, a lot of singles, a lot of stolen bases, a lot of strategy. And now this whole postseason is three-run homers. Everywhere I look, it's a three-run homer that determines a game in every series, it seems.
I don't believe that at any point in when the Kansas City Royals were en route to the World Championship that the words launch and angle were put in the same order out of anyone's breath. Do you recall any of those conversations?
No. And they weren't tape measuring anything. But it just goes to show you the cycles that baseball goes through. And here's a good piece of news that I'm reading, Bob. In case it's necessary in Game 3, David Price has offered up his services out of the bullpen.
Oh, there's good
so,
news. See, there's
so
always
I think you're
good
okay.
news someplace.
I think you're all right, Bob. Well, I think you're going to be okay.
You know, he did it last year. And he
by the way, before we get to some of the other series, okay, it is so interesting to me the way these games are scheduled. Okay, the obsession with the Red Sox and the Yankees by the networks continues at almost fever pitch. And the Houston Astros are the best baseball show on earth. Okay, and the yep. Indians may come back. They're the defending champions. They have talented players all over the field. They have Verlander and Cole and all this other stuff, and they are being treated like a lounge act on television.
Yep.
They played indoors. They're playing in the afternoon. They don't even have to put the it's quite amazing to me. It's quite amazing to me how I think the appeal of the Red Sox and the Yankees is over-evaluated nationwide. And, Mitch, you can speak to that.
Well, it is. I mean, as I say, the feeling out here is that these guys play all the time. You know, and didn't they already play the playoffs? Because all you ever see on Sunday Night Baseball is the Yankees and the Red Sox. I was astounded when I read going into the series that this is the first time they've met in the postseason since 2004. I said, you got to be kidding me. It feels like we see them play these critical games all the time with all the history, but they're always under the lights. They're always at night. And you're right, Mike.
They always are facing midnight finishes.
Yes, exactly. And did you stay up long enough to see that incredible end to the game? And they do play great games against one another. But Houston, Cleveland, now, I mean, when you say those two words in any one of the three major professional sports, Houston, Cleveland, unless LeBron James is still on Cleveland, nobody wants to put that game on. I don't care what sport it is. Nobody's going to put that game on prime time because they don't represent markets that are big enough. And then you say New York, Boston, and of course they
But Houston's
they want to
the
have
fifth biggest market in this country.
You would think that would matter, right? But they, meanwhile, I love watching those games in daytime and sunlight.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. Yeah. Looks like baseball to me. But, you know, let's remember very soon, as in the end of the week, we're going to see, I think, Houston taking on one of these two teams. And then Houston will be in the spotlight, and they'll get theirs. And New York or Boston is going to find out just how good the other guys are and not the ones that they play every other week.
And Mitch, can I tell you something? Can I just tell you something? Having experienced it last October, Minute Maid Park, Bob, I don't know if you spent any time there or any of consequence. It is a great baseball environment. It is a great baseball. It is as loud as any place in baseball, and it is such a fun way to watch an incredibly fun team.
And you get a train, too, on top of it.
You get a train,
Hey, speaking of daylight, today is the 62nd anniversary of one of the great days in the history of my beloved baseball. It's because on October 8th, 1956, Don Larsen pitched a perfect game against the Brooklyn Dodgers, and October 8th is a date that I always have etched. It's a high holy day of baseball for me and for certain others of our
Joe Trimble's lead in the New York Daily News, by legend, just given to him as a throwaway line by Dick Young, is the imperfect man pitched a perfect game.
Perfect. Yes. Is it true that was it Trimble? Is that his name?
Joe Trimble.
That he froze up? Because of the that was the story I always heard, that he froze up because of the largesse of the moment, and he was like, I don't have a lead. And Dick Young, being Dick Young, just trying to shut up, here, give me either your typewriter or a piece of paper, or whatever, and wrote down the imperfect man pitched the perfect game. Go, that's the way I heard that story. Like, it was more out of annoyance that Young gave him that line than anything else.
But I have heard this across my career in the biggest moments. I can remember being in the press room in Lake Placid in 1980 after the U.S. kids beat the Russians. And I won't even mention the name of the writer who said, "Oh man, how do you write this?" And I said, no. We slogged through a lot of bad nights in sports. These are the kinds of nights that we want to write.
Right.
These are the kinds of nights that we hope will happen maybe once in our career. So, no, if you can't write tonight, then you have to find something else to do.
Well, if that story's true, it's a great one. It's one of those things that, well, it feels true, so let's make it true. Meanwhile, let's go over to the National League. And, a lot of people thought the Dodgers were going to sweep that series against Atlanta. And if not for a Grand Slam home run, they probably would. But Ronald Acuna Jr. Kept things alive for the Braves. I don't think it's like a temporary derailment. It's not like Buehler wasn't pitching a good game. It's just, you give up one grand slam, and that basically was the story of the game. But it does keep Atlanta alive and make that series more.
Well, Freddie Freeman's home run became the story of the game late, right?
Yeah. Well, ultimately with the score, absolutely. Yeah, 6-5. And so, now that game goes on to game four. Does anybody think that the Dodgers have anything to worry about here?
Not much, but I just love the dramatic ending of that game. Of course, I still think the Dodgers are much more overall talented and should win. But I'm happy that Atlanta was able to keep it alive. I definitely. And you mentioned Freddie Freeman. I mentioned it the other day. He's putting together a career in the shadows.
It really is. It's so true, Bob. Talk about him. What he's been a wonderful player for a long time, and he kind of lasted through this rebuild and in what for now is the biggest moment of his career. He saved him last night, because once the Dodgers did, Mitch and Bob, once it was 5-5, you thought the Dodgers were going to sweep.
Of course.
Freddie Freeman is a career 309 hitter with a career OPS of 892. I'm happy that he had a moment that people could get some attention.
And we didn't get a chance to comment on it because it came in the middle of the week between Monday when we do the first podcast and Friday when we do the other one. But looks like Clayton Kershaw does know how to pitch in the postseason. So something to put in your back pocket as the Dodgers keep going.
A nice team the Brewers have. They are so hot. Nobody can remember the last time they lost a game.
11
they
straight have a, now.
Christian Yelich is having an unbelievable run. Ryan Braun, remember him, is hitting .385 against the Rockies. And Bob, a guy the Red Sox didn't want, Travis Shaw,
that goes down one of the worst deals, obviously Shaw for Thornburg.
But mark my words on this, Mike, we've seen it before. The best thing that can happen to the Milwaukee Brewers at this point is that the Dodgers win fast. You do not want
to
sit around.
You've seen it happen twice to the Tigers.
I've watched it here in town. I said they can't be any hotter than this. And then a day goes by without baseball.
Hey,
another day goes by without baseball. Another day goes by without baseball. This is not football where you cherish your days off and you lick your wounds and you say, boy, I'm getting healthier with every day that we're off. Uh-uh. There is mojo and there is karma and you want to keep it going. And depending on if that LA series goes the distance, that's at least, it's got to be at least 4 days off. You know, and 4 days off when you are on an 11-game winning streak is not a good thing. So best thing for them is Dodgers win 10-0 and they schedule game one for them.
Hey, we have to have a sports reporter salute to the Kratz Meister.
Oh, no, I was just going to bring it up, Bobby. What a great story Eric Kratz is.
The man, for people who don't know, he was under my radar his entire career. I'm sorry. This is his eighth team. He's been with two of them twice. He didn't hit the bigs till he was 30. He's 38 years old, oldest man to start a game at behind the plate in the history of the playoffs. And this is his, and he is cherishing this moment. He is it seems like a pleasant fellow. And how you gotta love it. With Eric Kratz, 3-for-4 yesterday. He's getting base hit. This is why we love, you know, one of the many, many reasons the three of us love sports, because these stories pop up out of nowhere. And this is one of the best ones of recent times in baseball.
Went 3-for-4 in the clinching game. And there's one other guy we got to talk about on this team, Mitch, is Josh Hader. Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. What a trip he is every single time he comes out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to college football, Michael, you've got something to say.
Well, it is well known if you listen to me or follow me, I'm a big proponent of Gillette razor blades. It's the only razor blade I have ever shaved with. My dad gave me my first Gillette razor. My 94-year-old pop still shaves with one. I'm a once a day shaver, but I want it to be easy, and Gillette makes it easy, and it always has. I have the Mach 3, I have the Fusion Pro Shield. I know this sounds like inside baseball for razors, but it's if you've ever shaved with these razors, you know. The shaving cream is great, okay? My son's now shaved with Gillette, and it's you know, this is a heartfelt product endorsement, because it's the only razor blade I've ever known. And here's the deal. You can now get Gillette quality blades at the best value and convenience with something called Gillette On Demand. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. This is making shaving with an easy razor even easier. If you subscribe to Gillette On Demand today, you get 50% off your first order with the special offer code SPORTSREPORTERS50. That's SPORTSREPORTERS50 at checkout. You get free shipping and every fourth order free with this subscription to Gillette On Demand. Visit Gillette online at GilletteOnDemand.com and use SPORTSREPORTERS50 for 50% off your first order.
Okay, college football was a mess in a fun way on Saturday. A lot of three teams in the top eight losing, and I think eight in the ranked teams losing and switching things around. And when the dust settled, you've got Notre Dame in the polls that, of course, don't count yet, because, you know, we just take polls. There's only one poll that matters, and it hasn't woken up yet. But Notre Dame is now sitting undefeated. They have won three games, including not only Saturday, but also against, what was it, Michigan and Stanford, who against ranked teams.
Yep.
They got the hardest game left for them is USC at the end of the year. And I'm not looking at that, considering the way I'm watching the Irish play. I don't see them losing unless they have an off week. I could see them running the table. And now you've got an interesting situation, because Notre Dame's not going to play any of the teams that are ahead of it for the rest of the way. And you have one of those things, is Notre Dame going to bump out one of the other big teams and get into the college football playoff? I will tell you, for a team that switched its quarterback after several weeks, and they were already winning, you know, and this is now the new modern 2018 version. You win and you switch your quarterback. That's the technique from Nick Saban to Notre Dame to, was it Oklahoma, and other places have done it. I like this team. I mean, I hate them because I live in Michigan and we don't have any love for them, but I like them, admiring them. They really look capable of competing for a national championship.
I would find it very, very, very difficult to believe that if Notre Dame is undefeated, that they were going to come out of that committee and ignore business and ignore reality and ignore ratings and ignore history and ignore that Notre Dame will be one of the four if they're 12-0. I don't care who they have not played.
Well, I would think. Bob, here's what they have going for them. Okay. They have two SEC teams ahead of them. Okay. And one of them, you know, any golfer will know this. When you play the club championship, there's the championship flight and then there's the first flight. I haven't seen anything so far this season to think that there's only one team in the championship flight and that everybody else is trying to be the best in the first flight. But, you know, George is going to lose. You know, eventually, George is they'll end up having to play Alabama in the SEC championship game, right? Or am I?
Yeah.
Because George is in the SEC East, okay? But yeah, it's going to be hard to keep Notre Dame out if they win out. But I will say this. Does anybody watch this season and think that if it ever did turn out to be Notre Dame versus Alabama in the big game, that it would be any different than the last time Notre Dame made it that far and played Alabama in the big game? Because there's one quarterback, and that's Tua, okay, who is playing every week, puts up numbers that you can't believe. What do you have, 10 completions for 300 yards or something on Saturday?
10 for 10 for 304 in the first half. I went like
it's off the charts, and to have Jalen Hurts as a mop up man, who is essentially that's what he's, the garbage time quarterback. Now he plays in the fourth quarter, and there hasn't been a team this dominant in this kind of collection in a while, and there are a lot of dominant teams in college football, but when Alabama has to start manufacturing phony dramas about whether their fans are supporting them or not, you know they're bored. I mean, they're winning every game. Nick Saban's got the grumpy face on because I don't think you really shut a team down when you gave up 31 points to them. Hey, I got news for you, Nick, and it's not news for you because you know it. When you're winning, when you're scoring 65 points, it's really hard to motivate your defense to make them feel like if we allow this touchdown, there's going to be something wrong with us. You know, you're winning by 30, you know, remember that commercial, it was a few years ago, and I don't even remember the product, but I remember the commercial where the coach is screaming and he's screaming and he's screaming, and one of the players looks at the other one and says, didn't we win by 30? And the coach says, that's the problem. You know, like, there's something the matter with you. You're not angry enough because you're still satisfied by winning by 30. They are so far ahead. They didn't just, you know, Arkansas isn't like one of the teams that you play in the first three games, you know, our sisters of the weak and helpless. They're a, you know, major college program, 65-31. I mean, these games aren't even close. Nobody is going to test them until they get to, I think, an SEC championship game, if it does end up being Georgia or somebody like that. And so you're right, Mike. I'm not sure it matters who you throw in against them at this point.
Nick and Dabo combined for 128 points on Saturday, by the way.
And by the way, don't you love the fact that Nick was actually not long ago even sort of asking the media for help, Mitch? To point out the flaws in his team, and when Nick has to go to the media with his hat in his hand asking for help so that people won't see how good his team is, that's pretty good.
Hey guys, we had a casualty over the weekend, and Mike Stoops,
who was either
fallen on his sword or B had it plunged into his back. I don't know exactly how what the truth is, but the DC of the Oklahoma Sooners is
overreacted to the Red River loss, huh, Bob?
What a game, by the way, with the flight. I actually watched the entire game and enjoyed with no rooting interest. Just bring it on. I want to see how this comes out. And it was a lot of fun. And so anyway,
93
Mike Stoops,
points.
See you later. Most points ever scored in that rivalry.
Tom Herman can coach, and Texas, you know, you're always reluctant with one win to say that they're back, but man, it does look like they're back.
Sam Ellinger looks like, you know, he can play, but Tyler Murray's exciting as all hell, though. He really is, you know, and but that was some game.
And you know, this is the thing about continuing great programs. You go from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray. You know, you go from Jalen Hurts to Tua. You know, the elite now. If you were to ask me, so what defines an elite college program? What is separating Ohio State, Alabama, even Notre Dame now, Oklahoma, from the other teams that are chasing them in their respective divisions? It's depth, and it's backup, yes, and it's not just using that expression "next man up." It's having a frickin' superstar as your next man up. And how many times now at Ohio State has a quarterback gone down or a quarterback graduated, and you say, "Well, this is going to have to be an off year or an off game now," you know, because they lost their grip up. And in steps another guy you never heard of until suddenly he becomes a household name, like Dwayne Haskins, you know, who people weren't talking about before the season, and now, you know, he's a Heisman Trophy candidate. Or Alabama, who can't decide between two guys who could start for every single college program and rack up the yards. And it's the same thing with Oklahoma. And it's the teams like, now look at, by contrast, it's in my backyard, Michigan. They've got a, you know, a big name coach with big name recruiting and a big name program, but he has not been able, Jim Harbaugh, to find a quarterback. I don't know why, because he's a quarterback himself, and he obviously knows, and he's coached great quarterbacks in the past. But he scrambles every year to try to find a quarterback, and the current guy is a transfer, you know. And if he goes down, they're in big trouble.
But Mitch, let me ask you this about Harbaugh, because you are passionately aware of his entire career, okay, from the time he was the Michigan quarterback all the way through his pro. Here's my question. Quarterbacks, why does Calipari get all these kids? Because they know he will get them to the pros, okay? And he'll probably turn a lot of them into lottery picks. Do they look at the way Jim Harbaugh clearly likes to play football and think to myself, I'm a star, blue chip high school quarterback, and I want to throw the ball around? They know they're not going to get to throw the ball around in Ann Arbor.
You know who you sound like right there? The rival coach who goes into that kid's house. And you're absolutely right. That's what the other coaches are telling these kids about. Yeah, well, I know you're considering Michigan. You know, Michigan fine's a fine school. It's a fine school. You know, they got a good program, a good history. But, you know, I'm just saying, they sure like to run the ball up there. And, you know, we down here, we like to keep the ball in the air. You know,
hey guys,
and,
by the way,
yeah, you're right.
Are you aware who is lining up as the potential successor when Tua heads on?
His brother.
His brother. His younger brother.
He's got a brother.
All right, I got one more thing about the Big Ten, Mitch. And you look at Ohio State's schedule the rest of the way. There's only one team that's standing between them. It's Minnesota. It's Purdue. It's Nebraska. Michigan State. Maryland. Yeah. It's Michigan. Michigan on November 24th, okay?
Thanksgiving weekend.
Is all that is standing between our guy Urban going back to the tournament.
Yeah, and I right now, the way Michigan is playing and looking, and that game is in Columbus, I would not be counting on that and being that tough a game for them to win.
This game, because it's amazing, though, that the loss to Notre Dame is going to just stay up there for Michigan if they don't lose any other games, and then their Super Bowl becomes that game on Thanksgiving weekend.
Well, at this point, and given the history, their Super Bowl was already that game, Mike, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Harbaugh's not there for one season, and he's not there for this season, and nobody thinks that they're going to win a national championship, even if somehow they found their way into a playoff. But they need to win against Ohio State under Jim Harbaugh. They're going to play Michigan State in a couple weeks, and Michigan State looks very down now. What seemed to be a Michigan State, that's going to be at Michigan State as well. But they actually have a chance to do that, and you know, he needs to beat them too. But you're not a Michigan legend or coach until you have beaten Ohio State and hasn't done it yet. So that was already their Super Bowl. And I'm watching Michigan every week, and they're not a complete team. That right now, if they had to play Ohio State, I think they'd lose by 20. So I would not count on. Now, they can get better. You know, college, that's the thing about college football. It changes week by week. And 4 weeks from now, teams can play a whole lot better. But right now, if I put those teams on the same field, I don't think it would be that much of a contest. Michigan wins games, but they don't dominate games, you know, and Ohio State wins by 60. All right, before we do our parting shots, I want to tell you about Hims. a new wellness brand for men. Now, let's say you've got sexual performance issues. These are sometimes tough topics to talk about, but you know, it's more common than you think. Over 25% of new ED cases are guys over 40, and 40% of men my age 40 struggle from not being able to get and maintain an erection. Even the world's greatest actor can't fake one, although I'm not sure who that would be. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn instead to medicine and science? There are solutions, and 4hims.com is the solution, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat ED. Well-known generic equivalents, the name-brand prescriptions to help you combat ED. If you've ever tried to pay for ED medicines over-the-counter, you can see exactly how expensive they are. So getting generic equivalents can make a big, big difference. There's no snake oils involved in this, no gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. One ED pill starting with a V just came off patent on December 11th. Wink, wink. That's a game changer. No waiting rooms, no awkward in-person doctor visits, no lines. You can save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's easy. Answer a few questions. Chat with a doctor. In the comfort of your home, products are shipped directly to your door. Hey, severe ED isn't just an issue for rich old guys in bathtubs or bathrobes. It affects men in their 30s and 40s as well, and being your best means performing your best. All right, here's the call to action, folks. Try Hims for a month today for just $5. They'll get you started for just $5 while supplies last. See their website for details. Hey, this would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or to a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/reporters5. That's forhims.com/reporters5. 4hims.com/reporters5. All right, let's go to our parting shots. And Mike Lupica, lead off, please.
When you see what the Eagles are going through right now, and the Eagles might go to 2-4 if they lose to the Giants in New Jersey on Thursday Night Football, you just have to appreciate the New England Patriots all over again. And understand again, even though their record is 5-3 in Super Bowls since Bill Belichick started coaching them, why this is the greatest dynasty in the history of professional football. Everybody knows what Lombardi's Packers were like, and Chuck Knoll's Steelers, and Walsh's 49ers, and a Cowboys team in the 90s that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years and should have won 4 in a row. But the Patriots have now done what they've done and sustained their excellence for nearly 2 decades. On the field, they have built the thing around 2 men, Belichick and Tom Brady, who are still going, who will be the main event, as we discuss once again next weekend when they go up against Patrick Mahomes and the 5-0 Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs may get them, or it may be the other way around. Whatever happens, you need to get what you're watching here, because nothing like this will ever happen again.
Bob.
John Gagliardi has passed away at age 91. John Gagliardi won more college football games than any man in history. Granted, they were NAIA and NCAA Division III victories, but so what? 489 wins is a lot of wins. He began at Carroll College in Helena, Montana in 1949 and then moved to St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, where he coached from 1953 to 2012. He did it his way. Cue the music. The Gagliardi method began with no cuts. If his roster had 150, then his roster had 150. Players were not to call him coach. No whistles, no blocking sled, and no contact in practice. Oh, and no weightlifting, and practices did not exceed 90 minutes. Seriously. But he won those 489 games and 4 national titles, 2 at Carroll and 2 at St. John's. He is in the College Football Hall of Fame. In terms of MO, I think the word unique applies.
Mason Crosby was not having a very good day. In Detroit against the Lions, he missed a 41-yard field goal wide left. He missed a 42-yard field goal, hit the right upright. He missed a 38-yard field goal, wide right. He missed a 56-yard field goal, wide right. Oh, and then in case the left side was feeling lonely, he missed an extra point by clanking it off the left goal upright. That's 13 points he coulda and shoulda, but didn't. Mind you, Mason Crosby is one of the best kickers in modern football, but he looked more like Norm Crosby yesterday. No matter what he tried, he couldn't get the damn ball to go through. He even changed his cleats in the middle of the game. Nothing. When they say football's a game of inches, this is what they mean. When they say it's a fickle game, this is what they mean. But even when they say that stuff, they don't mean this. Crosby's day was the worst for any kicker since Ralph Benerska of the Chargers in 1980. Remember him?
In other
words, nearly 40 years. A lot of teams would have had their kicker in street clothes before the final gun. But the Packers are a loyal organization and a smart one. So with a couple of seconds left in the game and the score out of reach, they sent Crosby back out there to try a 41-yarder. And he made it. That wasn't for the team. That was for him. And it was a pretty classy move by the coaching staff, who otherwise might have wanted to rip his toes off. Moral of the story? Anybody can have a bad day, even against the Lions. That's going to wrap things up for today's We will see you on Friday with a whole lot of baseball and set up the football week. And we do this every Monday and Friday, the Sports Reporters Podcast. You can get our podcast at iTunesRadio.com or wherever you get your favorite podcast. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't like what you heard, leave us a comment. We like hearing from you either way. Until we see you on Friday, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.